We've had so many amazing guests on the Retail Media Moguls podcast. Industry leaders who have come on to share their stories, predictions, and advice on all things retail media. Today, we're revisiting some of these evergreen episodes. Here's your host, Stuart Adamson.
So welcome to the Retail Media Moguls podcast. I'm your host, Stuart Adamson, founder and CEO of Platform 195. Today, we're privileged to host Minnesota-based David Glaser. It was at Target that David built the foundations of his retail and business career, working across a number of different departments, acquiring skills and gathering an understanding of the business from the shop floor right up to management, global operations, and running the Cartwheel app as business lead. He's gone on to found his own company, Digits, an organization that helps businesses with various retail services, such as navigating and improving their digital coupon strategy, personalization, offer planning, and loyalty programs to drive more sales. David, a probably last question, because I know we've got to let you get back to your day job. But I think one of the great pieces of advice, given the experience you've got, is if somebody was coming in and wanting to sort of set up their own retail media piece within a mid-level grocer in the States, what top three pieces of advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think the first is try to understand what your shopper wants. Like, are they just looking for, do you already have great delivery capabilities and they just need some offsite media? So I would be interested what the shopper wants. I would talk to your vendors about what they've seen work other places. So your top 5-10 CPG vendors love to talk about digital, and they all have people on their teams that are digital. And so they all want their time, if you will, with the retailer. So I would reach out to a few of them you trust, have some planning sessions, understand what they're seeing out there to inform your strategy. And then lastly, I would look for experts in the field. And so that's a little bit self-serving with us, but if you've never run a retail media organization before as a grocer, it's tough to launch it out and manage it. So whether that's Digits, that's somebody else, that's hiring somebody that's been at an Albertsons or whatnot, I mean, the talent is starting to get out there now. And so I would find some before and figure out the right way to help them make you move faster.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks, David. Talent, so important. Well, look, thank you so much, David, for gracing our Retail Media Moguls podcast. We're thrilled to have you back in the future to come and talk to us about developments in the sector, and maybe we can re-examine the connected TV piece and then also the sort of in-store data piece. But it's been great having you on. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I'll see you soon.
Sounds great. Great to talk to you.
I'm delighted to be joined by the head of UK Commerce and Global Partnerships, EMEA at Google, my friend Henry Eccles. Henry's worked with Google for over 17 years in roles such as head of YouTube and Google Plus marketing, and head of market insights. Henry delivered extensive media consultancy to Google's top clients and Europe's top advertisers across multiple sectors, including FMCG, retail, travel, telco, and auto. Henry also designed, built, and launched large-scale research platforms across France, Spain, and Italy, allowing for lower cost and faster turnaround reporting on advertising effectiveness. Really useful, I think, for people to hear how the tech's evolving. Let's say, given your experience across the market and all those retailers and all those years, if you were going to give a bit of advice to somebody setting out on their retail media journey today, what would you advise them?
I mentioned it earlier. I think don't be obsessed with retailer.com inventory. Yes, it's important. Yes, it's, you know, possibly a good place to start. It's not the only place to start, but yeah, if you think about the, you know, the supply budgets that you're bringing in, and what does that supplier really want to do? They want to acquire new customers. They want to, you know, reinvigorate lapsed customers possibly. And yes, you can do some of those things on your own retailer.com, but actually I think it's about making sure that you're helping your suppliers' advertising or messages show up, you know, at all stages of the customer journey. And ultimately, if it's around traffic acquisition, it's about, you know, net new customers or winning market share, then, you know, you really need to be working, you know, the top of the funnel just as hard as you are the bottom of the funnel. So whilst absolutely, you know, on-site search and on-site display are, you know, going to be absolutely key channels for, you know, for any retailer, they are very much kind of the bottom of the funnel. That's when the customer has already decided that they want to possibly shop with you as a retailer. But ultimately, the solutions that I think are really going to be incremental for, you know, for the supply base is, you know, is making sure that those messages are out there, you know, on the broader, you know, upper funnel media. So, you know, YouTube and socials and third-party display video, connected TV, you know, even Google search and shopping, where they haven't decided, you know, where they're going to be shopping from. So I think, you know, that would be my advice, is don't obsess about, you know, on-site search or on-site display. obsess about the whole funnel and think about the full customer journey, not just the bit that's closest to the point of conversion.
Yeah, and I totally concur with that. Look, Henry, I won't take up any more of your time, but just to say a massive thank you for taking the time. As I said, it's been a brilliant insight into your world. What I often ask, but not always, but often ask and definitely ask you is whether you'll come back and join us again in, let's say, 6 months' time and see how things have evolved, because it'd be really interesting to see how you guys have evolved here and, you know, and what else is happening in the space. But yeah, as a final, will you, so first question is, will you?
Yeah, happy to.
Great. And as I said, final, very big thank you to you for taking the time. As I said, it's been a brilliant insight. So, and hopefully we'll get to see you again soon. We have the honor of welcoming Roger Dunn, a paramount figure in the world of e-commerce and retail media. As the first person in Australia to be Amazon Advertising certified and the visionary behind the establishment of Criteo's retail media business in ANZ, Roger boasts an illustrious career that spans over two decades. His leadership steamed organizations such as Group M, Commerce, Criteo, and Ubiquity provide a testament to his profound influence and prowess in the industry. And with unparalleled expertise in retail media strategy, SaaS digital solutions, and agency side innovation, Roger has cemented his place as a luminary in the field in Australia. His contributions, particularly his work at the intersection of media and commerce, combined with his commitment as a founding member of the IAB Retail Media Committee, showcase his relentless drive to shape and redefine the future of retail media. So for businesses that are just sort of entering this space, there's probably two questions here. One is, what are the pain points that you're really seeing in there? And then what advice would you kind of give them to get this thing up and running in a quick way?
So obviously working for technology companies more recently, I do feel like the technology piece is probably easier to solve these days in the sense that there are built for purpose platforms to help a retailer set up a program. But I think you've probably heard in the industry, it's more than just the technology. You need to have buy-in from the top, but then the actual teams in place that understand this essentially a new business for a retailer. So retailers are very good at, you know, selling a product and that's their core business, but becoming a media owner and having the relationships with the right teams to sell media into those teams and go after different budgets than you've had before in terms of marketing budgets versus maybe trade budgets that you're used to, that obviously needs a different perspective and probably a different experience that can be learned, but perhaps would need some injection of resources or talent in there to make sure is coming from an experienced place. So I think they're probably the challenges and they're not insurmountable, but definitely areas to think about as you're building out your program. You know, tech's one thing, people is another, and then how you set the KPIs and the relationships between people, both internally, but also, you know, with those JBPs externally, whether you're a retailer with brands or a retailer perhaps with the tech platform.
Yeah. Tell me a bit of just finally before we end, just around the Citrus ads piece. Is it still a case of retailers are taking that on as a ad serving and obviously, you know, retail media tool, and therefore most and all the spend is still coming in to the retailer across the technology in their platforms? Or are you seeing now that there are brands coming to you directly in order to, you know, go across multiple retailers? How's that relationship evolving or working now?
I think retailers are certainly coming to us for the technology to set up their own programs. I think, you know, to date, most of those have been a white label, if you like. So the technology is built for purpose and, you know, specific to that retailer. But we are seeing both in a number of different markets where network plays are coming together, where the retailers perhaps are more numerous in their numbers, but smaller in their size. And therefore, to aggregate that across a network buy makes much more sense. Because, you know, there are so many players that probably a small number of players that can build their own. There's a bigger number of players who can have their own retail media network and to attract, you know, advertisers. But then, you know, there gets to a point where there's just only so many a brand can handle and manage within their core team. And then it becomes helpful if there are ways to sort of reach an aggregate number of retailers that, you know, combined are actually quite an impressive offering, but individually would be difficult to manage.
That's interesting. So there's almost sort of a two-tier thing emerging with the sort of almost like the old ad network piece underneath and then the big players at the top. Wow, amazing. Great. Roger, look, I think we've hit our half hour. So I'm going to just say thank you immensely for enlightening our Retail Media Moguls podcast with your profound expertise. We'd love you to come back at some point and tell us about how things are going and probably a bit more about the Asia Pacific market once you've got your feet under the desk and your bum on the seat of the plane, I suppose. You know, that would be great if you could come back and talk to us about that. And also how the IB is developing things in Australia. It'd be really good if you might come and do that for us.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, really good to talk to you. And yeah, thanks for having me on. And yeah, I'll keep my ears open for the other episodes as well. Look forward to it.
Great. Thanks, Roger. We're joined by the retail media and data leader at Ocado Retail, Jack Johnson. Jack is a commercial leader able to rally people behind his passion and skill for data and retail media. And with his experience working with some of the biggest names in retail, Ocado and Tesco, for example, it's easy to see why his unique overview of the retail industry makes him a guiding light for companies when they need to evolve, maintain, or revolutionize their media strategy. So if you are advertising, if somebody's using your audiences and they're targeting those audiences, are they bringing that traffic back to Ocado, or are they advertising on third-party sites and non-Ocado sites and then taking those audience away to potentially a competitor or their own brand site? How does that work in your world?
Yes, the current Trade Desk proposition we have, which is that self-serve ability to send advertising to Ocado audiences, is fully branded. It's all linked to a given brand and it will link through to a branded page. So this will be branded content. So it'll go through to a brand's homepage that exists, right? So it doesn't directly link to us. And I think this is our first step in understanding the power of first-party data in targeting on offsite and in open web programmatic. And I think we want to understand where the value is. That is a first step into this, but ultimately it's allowing advertisers the power to leverage our first-party audiences.
Yeah, and then capture that brand spend effectively. Because traditionally, most brands like work with a retailer, right? That's how they get to market. So I suppose if they're selling their own products on site or it's a consumer, it's more of a brand spend, presumably that's what they're putting into sort of audience offering. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that's one of the big shifts that we talk to our supply partners a lot about is we talk about retail media networks, but the big shift that we know is being talked about and we're starting to see this come to fruition is the use of retail data within top of the funnel activation. So as the third party cookie deprecates and brands lose their ability to address audiences in an impactful way, we see the opportunity to use first-party data to be able to do that. And I think that our key thing with all of this is it needs to be compliant, needs to be privacy and secure. And I think that's a really big, important part of our ad tech flows to make sure that we're doing what's right for customers. But ultimately, this is looking to solve that challenge that brands have on addressability and the ability to target and reach within that top-of-funnel activation that is going to become more and more challenging, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second. So how are you going to manage the cookie apocalypse? It seems to be a standard question on this podcast.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And I think everyone's tackling it in different ways. I think for us, and the number one conversation we're sort of having with brands in this space is how can they create their own first part? Like, how can they leverage our first party data to help replace some of those use cases they used to have using cookie-based targeting? And I think this opens up the broader world of data clean rooms and data collaboration, which is definitely front of mind for a lot of our more sophisticated brands about how can they use our data, publishers' data, even their own first-party data. And where do those use cases for data clean room technology exist? That's a fascinating space that is still evolving very, very fast. And I think we'll see a lot of momentum. But yeah, for me, that clean room technology is going to sit across three main use cases. There's the insights that a brand can glean from doing various matches. There's the activation, so the pushing of those audiences to various platforms. And then there's the measurement piece, which is big. So I think all three of those have their own merit. I think we are going to start very much from an insight perspective. So we've got great first-party data. How can we, in a secure way, be able to allow other first-party data holders to match that data and use the power of our first party data to give them a better understanding of their data? I think that will be quite a lot of use cases that we'll sort of work on in that space, but it's the obvious first place to start, really.
We're privileged to host Kayla Winstead, winner of the 2022 Next Gen Award and Vice President of Retail Media at Hy-Vee. Kayla is extremely passionate about reimagining the future of food retail in America and her stated goal is to create a healthy and enjoyable work culture for her teams and to inspire and serve shoppers and communities. As the world of retail media changes and the focus switches to omnichannel marketing and a cohesive cross-functional strategy from out of home to the adverts you see online, the need for new leaders native to this landscape with the vision to see a better future is stronger than ever. And that is why we're delighted to talk to Kayla today. Let's talk about In-Store Piece then. So tell us a bit about what you're offering there and tell us a bit about the innovations in there.
Yeah, In-Store is such a fun space. So I am an In-Store shopper, but I like to just remind everybody you have to be on the fence here, right? You have to keep a foot in digital and you have to keep a foot in store, my opinion, because 80% of all purchases today are digitally influenced. So I may be an in-store shopper, but I'm going to the, again, like we talked, I'm looking at the recipes. I may be adding to my shopping list. I may be adding to the cart, right? So there are a bunch of things that I'm doing online. I'm engaging with influencers through our social sites or offsite when I'm checking the news. Then I'll get a Hy-Vee ad about new products that are available in my store. So I am a very digitally engaged consumer, even though I wouldn't fall under an e-commerce consumer, right? So I think there's this balance of both. But to talk about in-store, I think, again, I've kind of said it throughout this, but it's really about the customer experience. So Hy-Vee is extremely focused on customer service and the customer. So in-store, we've had in-store audio, and knock on wood that this does come true because I continue to say it, but I think in-store audio is going to see kind of this resurgence like the QR code saw. So I am really excited to see what brands do with in-store audio and how we track that attribution as the data becomes more widely available. So in-store audio demos and sampling is a really powerful tool that I think some retailers don't consider that part of their retail media network. We do, as we just continue to try and marry the merchandising, the marketing, and the media together. So that is part of that experience. And then digital screens, of course, is huge for us. So we've made a huge investment on digital screens. A lot of our screens we have around the perimeters of our stores. So where is the consumer at a point of rest where I can speak to them and educate them on products in my store without disrupting their natural shopping journey, right? Like, yes, I want to grab their attention, but I don't want them to feel like they're in Las Vegas, right? We want them to feel like they're at Hy-Vee and it's a very natural shopping experience. So, and then point of sale as well. That's something that Hy-Vee has held close to our chest historically. It's only been utilized for Hy-Vee brand marketing, and we are going to open to some of our brand partners to allow them to maybe put a floor decal down or some aisle blades. So a lot of opportunities in store to speak to that consumer closer to the point of purchase.
And how are you delivering into those digital screens at the moment? Is it all done centrally or are you having to do it locally? What's the delivery mix?
Yeah, I'm a little rusty on the back end tech here, but we are partnered with Samsung. So that is allowing us some centralization to my knowledge. And it also allows for program buys, which has been huge for us, right? So again, centrally located here, but we really own the Midwest. So if brand is looking to do a national campaign and they're not bought in with Hy-Vee, they're really missing a huge chunk of this demographic. So partnering with Samsung and making those screens available programmatically has been really exciting for us. We just kicked that off officially this fall and so excited to really ramp up in space.
Yeah, really exciting. Have you got any tracking on those screens? Have you got anything that allows you to see who's watching and for how long?
We don't today. So this is interesting and definitely coming from a tech background, something that I kind of keep my eye on. There's all sorts of different hardware, and I think it comes down to the importance, right, and the prioritization of it. Attribution is certainly important to our brand partners. They want to know which assets did I invest in that actually moved the needle. And so there is this importance of how do I show attribution with the TV screens? And I get that. But I also would say, speaking on behalf of Hy-Vee and my teams, right? I don't think retailers should feel peer pressure to necessarily jump into that capital investment right away because billboards don't have tracking on them. There's all sorts of out-of-home advertising that works and is tried and true that doesn't have that attribution attached to it that we're still investing in because, you know, it is moving the needle. We may not be able to put our finger on it, but it's definitely working. And then I think, too, there is so much innovation in this space. And so seeing different tech providers that have solutions that integrate into existing systems, we have security throughout our stores just to make sure that consumers are safe and to help with shrink. And so how do you tap into some of your existing investments to be able to tie that attribution back?
There's a benefit to doing it. We did it. We've done it for clients and we did it for ourselves when we were at Thomas Cook. We put cameras on the screens. And part of the reason for that was what we wanted to do was demonstrate the value that our brand was bringing in terms of reach that went beyond the how many product sales that brand has achieved, because they would go and spend huge amounts of money on out of home when actually hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people walking through stores that have purchase intent, but may not buy something, but have certainly been exposed to the brand in an environment where they could buy it. Does that make sense? And actually what we found was that we could easily say to somebody, well, look, you only got 3% uplift in product sales, but at the same time, you got 1 million people watched your content. They watched it for an average of 8 seconds. And of those people, because it used to scan faces and tell us demographics and whether they were male or female and how old they were, it would actually be able to go back with real demographics to the partner and actually give them a value and say, well, actually, look, we didn't necessarily get you the product sales you wanted, but actually, we've given you huge reach and engagement as well. And also you could see which bits of content would resonate. The other thing we also were doing, we're looking at what we found was that we certainly in travel stores, we find that couples were coming into the store in the morning, whereas families were coming in the afternoon, because we had the cameras on, we could see. And actually, as a result of that, we started showing certain sort of holidays in the morning and sort of cruise holidays in the morning and family holidays in the afternoon around school finishing time. And actually, all of that is huge amounts of data that you can use to enrich partners. And it's actually relatively cheap to put the cameras on. So it's always worth looking at, because it just gives you a value metric you can give back that isn't just a passenger number.
Yeah, no, Stuart, I think that is a great counter. And you're absolutely right. The metrics that it opens up is extremely powerful, right? And it helps you tell your story with your brand partners. And to your point, it really helps your brand understand, how do I speak to this consumer most effectively? So I am with you on that. We could go down a rabbit hole, but one thing that interests me here.
Actually, one other little snippet on that is what we found also is that people were average watching. We had 12-second videos on there to start, and we found that people were watching for an average of 10 seconds, I think it was. So actually what we did was I think it was 8 seconds. So people were watching for 8 seconds, but our videos were 12. So what that meant was that they weren't seeing the end of the vid, which is ultimately the call to action. So actually what we did was cut all the videos to 6 seconds. It meant we could actually sell more in a minute. So we ended up putting the revenue up, but actually it was more effective for the advertiser because people were actually watching the whole thing through and then starting the next. You get this sort of data stuff that's quite exciting.
Yeah, you can definitely geek out over it. And not to go too far, but I think the one thing that interests me too about the tracking is with the privacy, right? And all the changes we're seeing around privacy. If you are making that investment, what is the risk in the near term and far term of being able to utilize that technology?
Yeah, and actually there is a privacy issue around it, because actually what it does is it takes 100 sort of shots a minute, sends it back to a server. So that means you've got a server somewhere with somebody's photo on it. So in Europe, we couldn't do it because of the privacy laws. In the UK, we could, but I'm not sure what the latest is on GDPR, but it has its own privacy challenges. I loved hearing about the audio piece though. That's really interesting. So you're doing radio in store? What are you doing for audio?
Yeah, so we're partnered with a company called Vibonomics to provide in-store audio. And you know what's funny? Again, coming into this space, and I've worked in a variety of industries, so I wasn't born and raised up through retail, but definitely can resonate as a consumer, you know, what my shopping experiences at Hy-Vee have been like. And I remember as a little girl going shopping with my mom, with my dad, and there was always this excitement in the store, right? And someone's over the loudspeaker talking to you about something, and don't forget to go to aisle 7. We've got XYZ on sale. Or don't forget to stop by the bakery. We're sampling our cookies or our apple fritters. And so you kind of forget about that, because then all of a sudden it was like, it just got so quiet. And I don't think I realized it, right? It's this evolution. And then I started working in this space, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, we do have this lever to pull of in-store audio where we can speak to the consumer. Again, it's not really jarring to their natural shopping experience, but it really helps reach them across the store, closer to the point of purchase, let them know what's going on. I mean, Hy-Vee has a variety of stores. We have very expansive stores. Our flagship stores are just, I would say, enormous and beautiful. And then we have our more rural locations. But it really helps to influence the consumer and just, again, make them aware of what you have to offer while they're in store.
The Retail Media Moguls podcast is brought to you by Platform 195. To learn more about Platform 195 and how to connect retail media with intelligent marketing to accelerate growth, visit platform195.com. And then make sure to search for Retail Media Moguls in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And on behalf of the team here at Platform 195, thanks for listening.